discretion is advised.
Live from Glasgow, Scotland, it's time for the revolution in professional wrestling radio as Robert and prepare to take you inside the ropes.
Welcome to another episode of Inside the Ropes. My name is Robert Duffin. I have been hosting this podcast since January 2012. Twitter fuckholes who want to ask who I am when I come onto the show.
That was so bizarre.
Yeah, it was a little bit. Honestly, 7 weeks and I'm obsolete.
You'll fade away and classify yourself as obsolete.
Anyway, as you can hear, I'm here with Sondra and David J. McCutcheon. This is the podcasting equivalent of Brock Lesnar versus Randy Orton at SummerSlam. I don't assume anyone's going to have traumatic head injuries at the end of it, but you never know.
We'll do our best to avoid it.
It is a crossover. It's a crossover. The first time, I think, for quite some time that the Raw Rundown, the SmackDown Summary have butted heads within the same podcast. Obviously, Kenny is away this week, gallivanting with various wrestling celebrities.
Jim Cornette partying with Bret Hart. Let's not go ahead and just sweep this under the rug, Robert. He is partying with my favorite wrestler of all time, and he didn't even bother to invite me.
I will say though that in 2016, partying with Bret Hart probably isn't.
I don't know how much of a party that's gonna be.
Yeah,
that sounds probably like my kind of party. We'd sit there and we'd stare at the wall and go, yeah, I hate that wall.
Yeah.
I think I hate it a little bit more than you do. It would be the best.
You and Bret Hart really would be the perfect match, wouldn't you?
The perfect match. The perfect match. We get to talk about things that we don't like. God damn it. This was my one shot to make a new friend, you guys.
I just like the idea of it's really hard to make small talk with Brett because just about everyone he knows is dead or hates him. So like you can't really go,
he could know me, Robert, and I would love him forever because we would be one and the same. He is my spirit animal. I love Brett.
I do love Brett Hart as well, apart from when he blames Seth Rollins for everything.
Oh, but I love that too. I love it all.
Kenny's doing some shows inside the ropes, Rise of the Agitator in London with Cornette, Jim Ross, and a surprise Bret Hart. If you haven't seen the video, you can go onto our Facebook page because it's a very fun surprise.
Or go to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheInsideNetwork.
Exactly correct. And enjoy
don't
that.
To get all of your Matt Hardy tickets too, we have to plug that. That would be insidetheropes.co.uk. Get those broken Matt Hardy tickets. That way you shall seek salvation from the obsolete dimension realm.
Yes, you want to be protected by the time the Great War comes to the UK. So please pick up tickets to these Matt Hardy shows. They are going to be ridiculously entertaining. How could they not be?
Here's the thing. Even if you don't like wrestling, I don't know why you're listening to this if you don't. But let's say you want to take a lovely lady or a lovely man on a first date. What better first date than to go see Matt Hardy ramble about the oncoming apocalypse?
Yeah.
Honestly, how does that not make two people fall in love?
Right. Like you see that and just boom, the next thing you know, you'll be grabbing people by the pussy.
Oh, let's see.
Oh, no. Oh, not that guy. let's not talk about that guy yet.
WWE Hall of Fame.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Yeah, I'm trying to forget about that. The international deletion tour with Matt Hardy, saving you from crippling loneliness and social anxiety in December and November 2016. So do go get tickets, and you might end up with a wife or husband. That would be nice, wouldn't it? So
yes.
Let's before I guess I turn over to you guys to talk about your respective shows, like because you write them.
we're heavily involved in the production of
I would be so embarrassed and ashamed.
I don't know,
SmackDown's pretty good.
I'm still convinced Sondra's on the payroll for that Rhino and Heath Slater thing though. I saw that picture and I genuinely,
it's like it was born from my brain
when I was skimming through Twitter and I saw that photo. This isn't even just for the sake of a joke. My genuine first thought in my mind was, oh, someone's photoshopped something to like make Sondra laugh. And then I looked and went, no, that's real. Oh dear, what's happened here? But it's interesting. It's definitely interesting. But TNA has been a big topic of discussion this week because, well, I say this week, for the last 2 weeks, there's been so many rumors swirling around about the company being up for sale, whether Bound for Glory was going to happen last week, last minute third party investors giving them the money because they couldn't afford to put on the pay-per-view, and then they had to, you know, was it going to happen, was it not, and then it did, and then there was tapings, and now it's, you know, are WWE going to buy the library for the network, or they're going to let Billy Corgan buy the company and take it on as its own thing, and now there's this survey that got sent out to people about a tiered version of the network in terms of payment, where, you know, you can pay nothing for very limited access, or you can continue to pay what you pay now for what you get, or there's this extra idea where you pay like $15 a month and there's going to be independent wrestling content. So, and the examples they give are Ring of Honor and TNA, for example, making WWE Network the, you know, one-stop shop for all wrestling, which I don't know whether that's Skynet levels of terrifying or not. I can't really decide. But Sandra, over to you first. Your thoughts on the sort of whirlwind cyclone of TNA that's been happening over the last 2 weeks.
It's kind of crazy because TNA has actually gotten kind of good. Like, I didn't watch this past week's Impact yet, but some of the stuff on there has actually been compelling, and not just the Hardy stuff. Like, there are other people in the company that I really like. Like, I've actually become a pretty big fan of Eli Drake, right? And I've been enjoying the shows. I don't know that they're like stellar or whatever, but it's just been kind of unfortunate that they seem to be in this like actual downward spiral, because, you know, we've joked about TNA being, you know, the Michael Myers of wrestling companies, right? Like, you just it doesn't die. And it just keeps coming back. And now there's like a third party investor that is mysterious and nobody knows who it is. And I don't even really know what to say that hasn't already been said to death online. Like, I hope that it survives. I think ideally what I would like to see is for Billy Corgan to manage to buy the company, rebrand it, do something different. I don't know if it's going to help at this point, because it sounds like it's just a money pit, right? And business-wise, I'm not a business person, so I don't really understand a lot of this stuff, but it doesn't sound like they're making any money. In fact, obviously they're not making any money if they had to have a third-party investor swoop in just to fund tapings. And it was just really crazy, because even on Saturday, like the day before Bound for Glory, everyone was like, is Bound for Glory going to happen? Like,
yeah,
people had tickets to this show. Are they gonna show up and nothing happens? Are they gonna fly in talent and then, oh, sorry, no show? And they did end up having a show, and I was glad that they did, because it was pretty decent, but it didn't really blow me away either. Like, I did watch Bound for Glory and there was some good stuff on there, but it wasn't spectacular, and I think that's unfortunate, because I think if they had put on a show that everyone was talking about and that everyone was like, oh no, this is really good, like, then maybe there would be a little bit more momentum going forward. And it seems like just dying gasps at this point. And I hope they can do something. Like, I don't know how much I keep going back and forth on, like, is WWE buying the library? Do they really have that much interest in it? Like, I can't see them spending a ton of money on it, because how much value are they going to place on TNA's library?
I wonder if they just start, I mean, you know, they developed this really close relationship with Gabe Sapolsky, Evolve, WWN Live. You know, they're floating Ring of Honor and TNA as potential acquisitions in this survey that's been sent out to people. And I just wonder whether they think, you know, if the WWE network can become
like
an umbrella.
Actual network, like with different tiers and channels.
Where, yeah, you can go in and, you know, you can watch the latest live events from Evolve and Ring of Honor and TNA and maybe like Progress or any of the companies that they've been teaming up with for the Cruiserweight Classic qualifiers, which is sort of the only thing I can think of being an indicator of who they might want to team up with, which seems crazy because obviously just 6 years ago, it seemed like, you know, WWE were in this, you know, hermetically sealed bubble that they didn't talk about the outside world of wrestling. They didn't even think of themselves as wrestling. You know, when CM Punk did the promo when he mentioned New Japan, everyone was like, holy shit! Like, you know, they said another company's name on their on their program, and to now where, you know, guys are coming in and they're keeping their names. Like the TNA top talent guys like Aries and Rude and AJ and Samoa Joe and people like that, you know, they're not changing their names. And I just wonder whether we're moving towards a period of time where it might be possible that, you know, WWE is WWE, it's sports entertainment, but maybe they see value in their network being the one place. Because how many, I don't know what it's like in the US, but I know that in the UK, there are multiple promotions now that film and stream their stuff. You know, even promotions that I kind of go, really? Announce that they have an online service where you can watch their shows. I'm kind of, okay, I don't know if you're really popular enough to sustain that. So how many subscriptions are people going to be willing to pay for? You know, if you've got WWE Network, New Japan World, ICW On Demand, the Progress, whatever their On Demand thing is called, WWN Live, Ring of Honor. You know, if WWE can become the one place where everybody goes to get all that content, you know, they won't, because I'm sure there'll be some companies that will refuse to sign over to them, which they absolutely should. There should be some that don't, yes, that don't say, please don't sign over to them. But, you know, for some companies who are not sort of hell-bent on becoming the sort of a world beater, you know, if you're quite happy, in the way that Evolve is quite comfortable being a sort of feeder promotion, and maybe a struggling company like TNA, I don't know, that could use a more permanent, stable home. I'm not sure. And I don't know how much it would be just the library or whether they would actually run specific live events. But I don't think it's a great thing if they become, you know, the one-stop shop. But it's intriguing. David?
What I think is I think that this is definitely the footprint of Triple H. I think that this is a business decision. This reeks of Triple H, right?
I agree, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is the type of thing that he's kind of been planting the seeds and sowing the seeds for a while. It's really strange to me that, like, I kind of feel bad for, like, Hideo Itami and guys like that who had big name value, who kind of came in, like, right before, and, you know, like Finn Balor's another one, who came in right before that cutoff, and it's like, oh, now everybody gets to keep their identities. Vince is okay with it now. It's like, ooh, man, that kind of stings a bit. But this is a very tricky scenario. I don't want to see the WWE become a one-stop shop. However, the thing is that's a little hypocritical coming from me, who does not pay to see Evolve, who does not pay to see Progress, or This Is Wrestling, or CZW, or anything. I watch New Japan. That's about it in terms of, you know, stuff like that. I don't order pay-per-views from Ring of Honor. I don't order pay-per-views from TNA. So maybe it's a little hypocritical of me to go, yeah, well, I don't know about all this. Because the thing is, if that were offered on the network, I would probably pay the extra $5 and have all of the content at my fingertips.
Yeah. I haven't really watched as much wrestling recently as I used to, but that's just more of a lifestyle thing. That's
right. It's not your desire. It's just what life has forced you into.
Yeah, for the moment anyway. But if they were, you know, yeah. So as little of WWE Network that I'm catching up on at the minute, if they said to me, you know, you could pay an extra $5 starting now and you would get Ring of Honor, TNA, and, you know, one of the other indies, I'd be like, yeah, probably. It'd be nice to have the, and I think, I don't know any hardcore wrestling fan that wouldn't say, cool, yeah, I'm going to save myself some money by paying the extra here. And they're monetizing stuff that, I think they can probably make quite a bit of money out of it, because I know a lot of people that watch all those shows, but they pirate them. You know, they use you know, extreme wrestling torrents or something to get rid of...
Which is despicable, by the way.
Yeah, to get Ring of Honor shows or Evolve shows and stuff like that. And maybe it's a way for there to be a revenue stream going to those companies if they license their stuff out to WWE, because people will go, oh yeah, it's an easy fiver. A lot of people don't. It's not even really the money, I think. It's just convenience. You know, they don't trust the stream. You know, like Ring of Honor have had a lot of trouble with live stream. WWN Live sometimes do. Yeah. WCPW had a problem this week as well with their live stream. And people are less willing to put the cash up front if they don't trust the live stream. And, you know.
Yeah, I used to order Ring of Honor pay-per-views all the time. And then after like the seventh time that they still couldn't get their shit together, I just stopped.
Yeah, and the network for, you know, it's had its issues, but nothing, you know, no show has ever, they've never had the kind of problems that ROH, Evolve, or WCPW had this week. So people might be a bit more kind of, oh yeah, cool, we'll give it a go, because it's a more reliable source. And it's a shame, I always think the companies always get really trash for it, and it's not the easiest thing to do, you know, it's a hard, I mean, yeah, they should try and be better at it, but it can be tricky, and once it's happening, it's hard to fix on the spot, you know? So.
Well, I mean, the WWE Network does have its issues sometimes. I mean, there was a time, you know, last week, or a couple weeks ago, I forget when it was a few weeks back, I was watching NXT, and it kept going to This Week in WWE, so it was very bizarre. I'm trying to watch Ember Moon versus, I think, I don't remember who Ember Moon was wrestling, but I'm trying to watch Ember Moon, and then all of a sudden it's cutting to Mick Foley constantly. And I'm like, no, I'm not trying to watch Mick Foley right now. I'm trying to watch Ember Moon. But I mean, the WWE Network support and everything, they're always pretty on it. And so I think smaller companies obviously don't have the resources of the WWE Network. And as long as the shows are available later on demand, like, maybe cut them a little slack.
Yeah.
Let me propose a question for you guys, actually, and I'll provide my answer afterwards. Okay. Let's say you are running a independent wrestling company such as Evolve. Let's say you're Gabe Sapolsky, right? Just, you know, for shit's sake. That way, you know.
Let me just get into character.
Robert is method acting here.
Yeah.
Let's say you're Gabe Sapolsky and WWE comes to you and goes, hey, we want to, you know, for a chunk of the change, we want to air your pay-per-views and your special events and your live streams and everything for your promotion. What would you say? Would you say yes or would you say no?
If I was Gabe Sapolsky and I was running Evolve, I would say yes.
Okay. What if you were someone less popular?
It's not so much about being, it's not about the popularity, it's about the kind of, the ethos or the aesthetic of the company. So, okay. Like, I think people get what Evolve is. So in that situation, I wouldn't see, like, you know, if Evolve was to say yes, I wouldn't see, like, I wouldn't go, oh, I can't believe Evolve, you know, are sucking on the teat of McMahon. You know, it's,
McMahon.
But if it was, you know, just because it makes sense, you know, if I was to hear that, you know, ICW had decided we're going to give all of our stuff to the WWE Network and ditch our on-demand thing, I'd probably be a little bit like, oh, I thought you guys had the kind of punk rock spirit. You wanted to do all this stuff. But then you can't really blame someone for wanting to take the chunk of change. You know, everybody's in it for the money ultimately. But I think if I was in that kind of position where I had a massive fan base that really loved that we were a little bit different and we were something not the norm, then I'd maybe be like, I don't know whether this is the right thing for me. But if I'm Gabe Sapolsky and running Evolve, I'm signing those papers ASAP.
I mean, I think it would depend too on how, like, it depends on a lot of logistics, right? Like, does WWE then have any control in the company and what you do? Do they have any say in the content that they're going to air? Because, like, TV networks have say in what airs on their networks, right? Like, WWE has to do a lot of things to cater to USA.
Yeah.
So I think if I were running a company, I'd have to think long and hard about it. And then also, how much of the profits are you getting? And is that going to be worth it? Because that was one of the things with WWE when they started doing the WWE Network and airing the pay-per-views on the network. They figured that they could recoup pay-per-view losses because they're getting 100% of the money from the WWE Network, right? Like, whereas they were getting a very, I forget what the stats were. We talked about it way back in 2014, back in the day you guys were discussing when the network, you know, first aired and everything.
Yes.
But they weren't getting a whole lot of the cut of that $60 that people were paying for a pay-per-view, right? So now they're only getting $9.99 versus $60, but they're getting 100% of that. So I think if I were a smaller company, I'd have to wonder, like, am I going to be making more money? Am I going to be getting more exposure this way? Is the exposure worth the potential restrictions and controls that might be placed on my company?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you've got to look at it that these smaller companies don't make, I don't think they make a lot of money from their live streaming, their events. They make most of their money for, I think having, for a lot of the smaller indie companies, I think having a live stream or an on-demand service is more of a prestige thing. Like you say, if you say you have one, then you must be legit. They make most of their money from the gate.
Yeah.
You know, they make most of their money from merch and ticket sales. And so if you don't make a lot of money from the WWE Network anyway, or sorry, from your live stream anyway, then sign it over. Way more eyes will see it on the WWE Network. And maybe you'll increase your live attendance and that's where you're going to make more money. But then you got to ask whether WWE, we got a cut of that because then they're kind of getting involved in that way as well. It's a lot of business things that we probably don't know the ins and outs of, but supposedly
my answer is very to the point. I would give them whatever the fuck they wanted and sell out like in a fucking heartbeat. It wouldn't even, I would just chuck it all at them and go, here you go, boys. You can book it from now on. So long as I get to see some of the revenue from it, absolutely fine. Because think of how many extra additional eyes are on that product, and you may spurn a few of the like diehards, but most of the diehards are going to stick around anyway. And for every one that you drive away, four or five more new people are going to come in due to that network. Absolutely. Change the landscape. I could be running CZW and you could turn it into 2009 WWE and I would be perfectly fine with it. Just give me that green. Give me that green, you guys.
Well, obviously, more as this story develops over the next few weeks, I'm sure it will be an interesting thing to follow towards the end of the year because these things are never quick. He says, as WWE put out a press release on Monday announcing they bought the company. So let's go over to Raw. Raw rundown, David J. McCutcheon. What was tickling your fancy this past Monday night on Monday Night Raw?
This will be a condensed version of the Raw rundown. Obviously, Kenny's not aboard, and respect to Kenny. R.I.P. Kenny, we'll be missing you. Puffy Combs.
R.I.P. Kenny. Let's not start rumors.
It's actually just like Bret Hart and Jim Cornette and Jim Ross killed Kenny, right? And so they're over in the UK gallivanting around, but it's like Weekend at Bernie's, and they just have to keep on propping Kenny up and. It's he's trying to make his bookings and he's got to talk to all these people and Bret Hart's just sort of nudging him out there. Then they start playing some Caribbean music and Kenny's corpse gets up and starts dancing. This is going to be really weird if like Kenny's dead tomorrow, right? Like this is
no other co-hosts are allowed to die. I made that rule the last time.
He's not the co-host though. Robert, you're not allowed to either, Robert. Him and Robert are the glue that binds ITR. So it's me and you that need to worry about death.
I think ultimately we should all be worrying about death. But let's talk about Monday Night Raw.
So this is a condensed version. I'm just going to run down some of the stuff that I liked and thought was particularly funny, you guys. And this will be all over the place. You know me. It's just a stream of consciousness. Something that the wife and I were discussing. Because Chris Jericho is just so great, we can all agree on that, right? Like,
oh,
Jericho's
yeah.
just on top of his game right now, right? Like, the best he's been in years, I think the best he's been since WCW. Like, I didn't
Whoa.
Think, yeah. I didn't think that anything he did in WWE prior to this could top the type of stuff that he's doing right now. I just think he's on fire.
He is ridiculously funny, though, isn't he?
Oh, he is. And the comedic timing and... I think part of it is that he's already reached the peak. He's already hit the summit in WWE before. He's had the main events, and he's had the five-star matches, and he's had the serious stuff down for so long that now he can kind of revert to that WCW just gleefully funny bullshit that he was good at.
What I kind of like is that this, I mean, obviously there's been different iterations of Jericho over the years, but this one feels like, this Chris Jericho does feel like the middle-aged version of WCW Chris Jericho.
Yes.
Like that character, if he had carried on like that, this is exactly where he would be now. We're revisiting that person. I don't really associate it with the, you know, No Country for Old Men Jericho from 2008 or anything like that. But yeah, he feels like this is the kind of jaded, bitter, annoying, middle-aged version of WCW Chris Jericho.
I think what's so good about him, too, is that it doesn't feel like he's just revisiting that. And I've seen quite a bit of WCW Chris Jericho, actually, because I think he's really funny. But I totally agree that it does feel like the natural progression of that character. But what's so good about Chris Jericho is that it doesn't feel like he's just resorting to his old tricks. It still feels like a reinvention. It feels like a natural progression for him rather than, just going to go back to, you know, what I used to do because that used to pop the kids back in the day.
Right, right. And we should be clear, too. He's not revisiting any of his old shtick. This is all new. But as Robert said, it feels like the natural evolution of where that character would be today.
And I always think, if there's a sequel to a movie like 20 years later and the same actor comes back to play the part, I always think it's really hard because sometimes they just don't really, they can't connect back to whatever it was they created in the last one. So, just as a bizarre example, it's just one that I can think of, but in the new Independence Day movie that came out, Jeff Goldblum is very, very charming in it, but it doesn't really feel like the same guy from the first one. And he's now just playing himself. Like, he's an older actor. He's become a parody of himself
almost. He's just so far departed from that role.
Yeah, and so now it's just Jeff Goldblum. Yeah, right. Whereas what Jericho's done, which is a lot harder to do, is to go back to a character, do something new with it, but also live in its skin and it still feels like the same person. So it's great.
Yeah. And again, though, I think a lot of that is authenticity. It's just an extension of himself. It's just him turned up to 11. And that's why it feels so natural. It's just a part of Jericho, you know? And I think Jericho realizes what a douche he actually is, because he is a little douchey, right?
Yes.
But that plays big time to his advantage, right? Like the scarves and everything, that wasn't a part of the character. That was like Tommy Wiseau just sort of making the room and then everybody laughing at it and then him going, oh yeah, it was a black comedy. It was supposed to be funny all along. It's like, no, Jericho, you were serious whenever you were wearing those scarves, but now
you do buy $200 scarves.
Yeah, right. He actually did do that. And now he realizes, I think he's wittier than Wiseau, obviously. Wiseau's a little bit of a literal alien. But with him, I think he realizes, oh, I guess it is kind of douchey. Well, I'm going to use that to my advantage. Let me be a douche. And it's perfect for him. He wears it well. And something that Val mentioned, since everybody loves Val theories, and I think this one is a really good theory. If Chris Jericho just came back for his little 3-month stint that he was doing for a few years there, where he would come back and get a WrestleMania payday and then kind of waltz away for a bit and then come back maybe to get a SummerSlam payday and then waltz away for a bit till the Royal Rumble return, basically just hitting up the hot highlights of the year, right?
Yeah.
If he were still doing that, would this have come around to this culmination of reinventing his character and making him go from being the most stale performer in the company to the one of the freshest performers in the company and a highlight on Raw every week? I don't think he would have, and Val also said that she doesn't think that he would have.
No, I agree.
No, because we wouldn't have been able to see the progression, and I think the progression is important, because that's what makes Jericho so good, is we've seen the whole story, right? Like, and I think the pairing of him with Kevin Owens, even though it came out of nowhere, it still feels like a progression because they're doing it so well. And I really liked the stuff that they were doing on Raw between Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho, you know, Team Kevin and Chris, Team Chris and Kevin. Like, they managed to make Ashton Kutcher and Danny Masterson a lot less insufferable.
Yeah, yeah, no, they absolutely did. And if Jericho were just coming back for these stints, that would be his gimmick. Is, oh, look, it's returning Chris Jericho. That would be his persona. Look, this guy is coming back for a little bit. But instead, he's been a regular for so long that it just feels like something that's actually culminating. And it's actually working. And it's a credit to Chris Jericho. Because he is amazing. And he's wonderful. And everything he does is amazing and perfect. And if anyone says anything bad about them, I will bust them in the mouth. How do you guys feel about Chris Jericho?
I love Chris Jericho when he's not making gay jokes with Enzo and Cass.
Yeah, I think he's very, very entertaining right now. And I'm glad, he's stuck around, and that's how he's been able to find his feet with a new character, I think.
Yes, no, I absolutely agree. The other two things that I wanted to mention about Raw that I felt were worth mentioning. The New Day absolutely remains one of the top acts in all of the WWE. I love the racial humor that they were busting out on Raw. they just, you can tell that no one writes for them, right? Like, you hear other people talk and it feels so detached from the way that real people speak. And then the New Day trot out there and they just talk like three young, hip black guys that blend in with nerd culture, which is what they actually are backstage and in real life. And it's just such a breath of fresh air. I absolutely love the New Day. I'm so happy that they still have the titles, and just let them break the record. Let them break the record. And after that, you can do whatever you want to with them, but they clearly deserve the record. Name one other act that has been on fire for over a year in the WWE without the crowd turning on them whatsoever.
That's a good point, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's real true. I mean, like, some of the New Day stuff is hit or miss for me lately. Like, the stuff that was on this past week was great.
You can tell the stuff that they perform and then the stuff that is written for them. There is a big difference there.
Yeah, and it depends who they're facing off with verbally, too, right? Like, Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho and the New Day, it felt fresh again. Like, it felt like the old New Day, not the old day, fuck's sake, but like the, you know, the good old New Day that we fell in love with in the first place. It was like, oh,
right,
you're just so beautiful. I'm remembering why we loved you.
Yes. Yeah. And that's exactly it. Is every once in a while, guys like the Club, who they ruined. by the way, the Club came out and said, we don't like games. And I'm like, you were making testicle jokes 2 weeks ago. You're just bitter failed comedians. Don't say that you dislike games now. You clearly loved games 2 weeks ago. But that's the thing, though, is whenever the New Day falls on their face, they get right back up and they do something and you go, ah, never mind, I love them again. So just absolutely wonderful. The other thing that I needed to mention, how great, and Sandra, I want to present this to you, and I want you to rant about it a little bit, if you wouldn't mind. How great was that main event with Charlotte and Sasha Banks?
That main event with Charlotte and Sasha Banks was so good. And you know what was even better about the main event with Charlotte and Sasha Banks? That it was the main event, and that it was a women's wrestling match in the main event properly. Like, it's interesting because people were like, yeah, well, women have had the last wrestling match on the show. Yeah, but that's not a main event segment, right? Like, there have been main event, you know, technically they were the last match on the show. Like,
but then they come out and have some stupid contract signing or something.
Yeah, exactly. They have some sort of promo segment, or they have, you know, authority. It's always the authority. It's always the authority, right? This didn't have the authority in it either, which was great. But but what's even cooler about that is that they set it up as the main event of Raw. And then throughout Raw, what did they do? They built to the main event of the show. It wasn't like, all right, we're putting the women in the main event, check our box, you know, whatever. And then they didn't mention it the rest of the night. They had multiple backstage segments with the women. They had Bayley interacting with Sasha Banks. They had Charlotte and Dana come up to Bayley and, you know, try and be mean to her or whatever, which brought back so many old NXT feelings for me, right? Like, Charlotte being a dick to Bayley. That's been happening for a really long time. And I absolutely loved Bayley just wrecking Dana too and being like, nope, I'm a grown up now and I have come into my own and I have shown character progression and growth. Thank you very much. And I will wreck your face that has all the makeup and all the land on it, right? And so it was very cool to see that they were building it as a main event that was worthy of being a main event. And then the match killed it. this wasn't one of those main events where they build to it and there's all this hype and then you feel a little bit let down because it didn't, you know, go that well. Or even sometimes when it's a good match in that spot, if it's been built as this huge thing, sometimes you feel a little underwhelmed. I don't think anyone felt underwhelmed by this. I don't think anyone felt like, oh, well, it's just another Sasha Banks title win on Raw. No, no, no. Were there tears? Yes. From Charlotte? Yes. From Sasha? Yes. From me? Yes. Absolutely. Like, I was crying along with them, and it was a beautiful moment. And what's even cooler than that, there are just so many cool things to talk about here. We're getting our first Women's Hell in a Cell match.
Ah, I can't wait for that, too. It's going to be great. You know why? Because there's no fucking door in Hell in a Cell.
I hate the door so much.
Fuck the door!
I mean, granted...
Robert, how do you feel about the door?
I hate that door.
That door is the worst thing in cage matches. I'm sorry. I've hated that door forever, and I'm so glad you agree with me, David.
No. Fuck the door. The door is bullshit. Val refuses to watch cage matches
because the door is so bad.
We turn our backs to the cage matches. Fuck that door.
I do think it's funny that Hell in a Cell matches always.
About that door.
I really dislike the cage door.
Yes.
I really, really do. I have strong, strong feelings about it. No, I do. I hate that the now anything goes with it. You can win. You know, back in my day, okay,
yes.
you didn't have all these ways to win the cage matches. You know, it was one or the other way, and there was no fucking secret door. Like, what kind of thing is that? How did you know you brought in the cage to end a blood feud, a feud that could not be contained in the ring? We need a cage to keep these dangerous beasts in there. How will they win? Well, they either have to use the cage as a weapon and pin each other, or they have to escape with their lives, or you know, they can just walk out the door.
Right, and so what infuriates me the most about the door is that, like, they close it, but then there's a ref whose only job is to open and close the door. Like, why do you even have a door? If escaping the door is a thing in a cage match, which it absolutely shouldn't be, but if escaping the door in a cage match is a thing, why not just, like, have an open door? Like, why have an actual
open
door?
Space where a door should be.
Yeah, exactly. Have a doorway.
That they need the door there to let people in and out. Well, let them do the entrances, then lower the cage around them to give it more drama.
Yeah.
It's
supposed to contain
science.
Them. Yes,
anyways,
I think we are. But the great thing about Hell in a Cell is that the door is locked and chained and shut. And that makes Hell in a Cell much better.
Yeah, fuck that door.
Fuck that door.
Don't fuck itself.
I do think it is funny, though, that Hell in a Cell matches seem to always just end up on top of the cell, though. Because, like, they pretty much always just end up on top of the cell.
I'm hoping that the ladies don't kill themselves that way. But
that's the only negative to this Hell in a Cell match is that I'm a little bit worried because they do tend to go all out in these matches, right? Like, I mean, in the main event of Raw, Sasha was doing a tope to basically start out the match. And I was like, stop doing that.
Yeah,
you're
gonna
kill yourself.
Need to go away. Need to go away in general. I'm not a fan of the move. Here's the thing: is everybody tries to do too much. You can get the same reaction by doing a different move, and we see Tope so much now
that it
never even gets a rise out of people, and it's so dangerous.
No, and I think that
it only gets a rise when it looks like someone's died.
Right.
Which is kind of when it suggests to me that maybe you've exhausted the usefulness of a move.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I mean, they want to go all out, right? And they're not going to slow down. Like, Sasha Banks is not someone who's going to be able to slow down. She's probably a little bit more like Daniel Bryan in that way, where she's like, no, I love doing this and I'm going
to
go all out for it, right? So I'm a little worried about them going all out in Hell in a
Cell. I can't wait to be retired by the time I'm 35.
Yeah. It's a concern because she's so young already, but like,
God. Gonna get me one of those brain lesions. Get myself out of this gig by the time I'm 35.
Yeah, you know, all the kids are collecting him. It's the new Pokemon.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I digress. Let me just say, a little bit of a controversial opinion, you guys. I kind of want that door to get cancer.
Man,
I hope it gets cancer of the handle, you guys. I hope it does.
They'll just introduce a pink steel cage to raise money for it.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
And now I'm just imagining the Pokemon theme ending with Brindley John, which is no, I can't get it out of my head. Brindley John. Anyway.
I don't know anything about Pokemon, and that's still making me laugh.
Oh, jeez.
Right, okay. So, because we are a little bit tight for time, Sondra has to go earn some cash on a Saturday night. That sounds like I'm suggesting some kind of...
What are you doing, Sondra? I hope you're not doing what I'm doing to earn cash on a Saturday night.
I'm just going to go, you know, solicit to the drunks of Grand Rapids. Which is actually true, but
yeah, smack.
But I'm not selling me. I'm selling alcohol.
Well, that makes. Well,
I thought you were selling Mrs. Son, Mr. Son. So, could have been.
Go out here in a crust,
right?
You do not know the how sexually ambiguous these drunken people in Grand Rapids are. So you don't know. You don't know their proclivities.
Well, too many of them I do because they make way too many comments about me at work. But anyway, there are some really creepy people. But
there are.
So SmackDown. Yeah, SmackDown was a pretty good show again this week. Did you watch it, both of you?
Yes.
I have not seen it.
Okay, I wasn't sure. David, I'm curious, because this whole Bray Wyatt, Randy Orton thing, I don't want to spend too much time on it, but You've been watching SmackDown regularly, and I don't know if you listened to the SmackDown summary where I talked about Eric Rowan getting stuck in a cupboard and how it was just indicative of this entire Wyatt situation, because the whole feud just seems so backwards to me. If they had done this creepy stuff with, like, Randy Orton hunting Bray Wyatt and Bray Wyatt hunting Randy Orton, and now, like... Randy Orton just locked Bray Wyatt in a storage locker this week.
He did. Which, and then he evaporated.
And then he evaporated and got out. And there was empty
wrench. Are you serious?
Yes. Yeah, that happened. That
was
actually
this amazing
happened.
Or awful?
Yes.
Borderline?
It was both things at once, I think.
It was definitely, it towed that line to where it was like, God, this is so stupid. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah. Yeah, and because, I mean, Bray Wyatt is, like, hunting Randy Orton or whatever, because Randy Orton appeared on the Titantron upside down to creep out Bray Wyatt, causing Bray Wyatt...
What?
Yeah, uh-huh. well, Bray Wyatt was in a match with Kane again, so that happened. And what did Bray Wyatt do? He just left the match. So he lost to Kane again.
So he lost to Kane again because... He's a chicken. Cheep, 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 cheep. I'm keeping Tommy Wiseau references going.
I don't understand any of the references. But
you will eventually. Sonia.
Okay.
You will.
Yeah. If David asks you how your sex life is, he's not being a creep. It's another reference.
So how is your sex life?
wait a minute. So Randy Orton appeared image flipped on the Titantron, right?
Yes, because he said he was looking at the world from Bray Wyatt's perspective, and then he was going to transform it or something, and then he flipped right back upside down, like, so that he was right side up in a creepy way.
That's rubbish. I didn't see it. It sounds rubbish. Sorry.
Also, Bray Wyatt is locked in the thing, and he more or less says, Sister Abigail, I knew you'd come.
Yeah, basically.
And then he evaporates. Through the power
because
of
Sister Abigail
authority.
Is back apparently, and so now like there was
Sister
the
Abigail's back.
Like he's talking apparently. To her again. I don't know if they had a falling out. I don't know if you know she abandoned him for a while. If her ghost.
Oh my God! What if Broken Matt Hardy is Sister Abigail? I just had this premonition.
What if it's
Abigail?
King Maxwell?
That would
be
wonderful.
But yeah, this whole Orton Wyatt thing, if they were doing all of this bonkers, ridiculous stuff before what happened at Backlash, like before Bray Wyatt was proven completely ineffective by, you know, just losing to one RKO and losing to Kane, and if Randy Orton hadn't had the upper hand this whole entire time, I'd actually be pretty into this head games thing, right? Because I like the idea of, you know, the man who hears voices and, you know, Bray Wyatt's always really creepy and all that kind of stuff. I like the idea of those two characters trying to play mind games and get into each other's heads and doing all this weird stuff backstage, but it just seems so much like Randy Orton has the upper hand that it's hard to completely buy in and invest. So I just, it's getting to the point where you just kind of roll your eyes and go, oh Bray Wyatt, like, okay, Bray Wyatt, sure, you're a god. You're the worst god ever. Like, you can't win. As he's walking away from Kane, he's laughing like, ha ha ha, I got you by walking away from this fight and laughing. Like, no, that doesn't make you dominant. That doesn't make you scary. Like, why are you telling people to run from you? Who in their mind would run from Bray Wyatt when you can just as easily beat him, or he will run from you, right? Like, that's the predicament that we're in with Bray Wyatt, and it's kind of frustrating. But, I mean, the delivery of it, I actually do really like. And I'm curious to see how this match goes. And
Bray Wyatt needs to win, though, right?
You know, he needs to win. He absolutely needs to win. But at this point, I'm just so used to him losing. It would feel so strange.
I can't remember the last big match that he ever won.
I think it was like Ambrose.
He never wins.
yeah, like Jesus.
I mean, the only one I can remember him winning without, like, ghost interference or whatever was, like, Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, that was, like, his one great match when he beat Bryan at the Royal Rumble in 2014, I think.
Yeah.
That's a great match. But he's been treading swamp water ever since.
Yeah.
It's not a good time.
So we'll kind of see what happens. But, like, at this point, I'm almost just kind of like, can we just have Orton just win and then be done with it? Maybe do something else with Bray Wyatt?
That would be nice, wouldn't it? That's happening at No Mercy, which is this Sunday evening or tonight, depending on when you're listening to this. I just had to get this out there that I can't take the promos, the Miz and Maryse promo for this pay-per-view seriously. Only because, well, one, I love that it's made to look like a perfume advert. Like, it is kind of funny. And it fits their characters, and it makes sense that maybe they would ask for that. You know, they got a little atomizer bottle. But
yeah.
In the trailer, where Maryse is like, in her French accent, saying no mercy. Because she's saying the French accent, it sounds like she's saying no thank you.
It does! It does absolutely sound like she's saying, no merci.
No merci. So it's like, live this Sunday, a great WWE pay-per-view, no merci.
No, like, thank you.
I don't want it. I would rather not get involved. It's just, it's quite bizarre. But it does look like an interesting card. How else did SmackDown build towards No Mercy?
Well, you should probably check this out if you like fun and also The Miz being fantastic. And David, I know that you and your lovely wife Val are not Miz fans, but like...
Oh, they're very anti-Mislim.
Yeah.
We are anti-Muslims in my household. Yes.
Please tell me though that you enjoyed the Dolphumentary, the WWE 24 special on the life and times of Dolph Ziggler, as presented by The Miz and Maryse.
I will do you one better and say that it was the best thing on SmackDown in weeks.
It was so good.
It was really good. The Miz is knocking it out of the park. This is the best that he's ever been in his entire career. And I really want Dolph Ziggler to win. They actually got me to care about Dolph Ziggler's retirement. I don't want Dolph Ziggler to go away, because Dolph Ziggler has always been one of the best performers in that ring. But the issue is that they could never get me to care for him because they made him lose so often. And now that something actually tangible is on the line, it's made me realize that I've taken him for granted and I don't want him to lose, which is the proper reaction. They elicited the proper response due to the scenario that they presented. Bravo, writing team. You actually did something right. Yeah. Right. Right. Wow.
Yeah. They're doing it so well. Like, I'm very invested in this Miz Ziggler thing, more invested than I am in the main event. And I'm actually quite invested in the triple threat main event as well. But the Miz and Dolph Ziggler story has been just so pitch perfect. And, you know, I'm a little bummed that I wasn't watching wrestling back in, what, was it 2006 that was the Spirit Squad? Because I have a feeling I would have loved the Spirit Squad.
Yeah,
you probably would have loved Spirit Squad.
They came back, Robert. Like, two of them came back on the show.
Mike Mondo and the other guy, yeah. Old Mike Mondo. I was very shocked to see Mike Mondo. Good for Mike Mondo.
I wouldn't have recognized either of them, but they were in cheerleader uniforms doing Spirit Squad things, and Mike, the Miz, Mizanin introduced them to me. So then I knew who they were, and I got pretty excited. Also, as Adam Ferguson pointed out, and I loved this too, they pointed out the continuity of why the other two weren't there, because two of them got lost in transit back to OVW, and then Adam tweeted the clip of the end of the Spirit Squad to me, and I was like, all right, so that transit back to OVW was actually a segment on the show. Interesting.
Yes, it certainly was.
So the Dolphumentary, though, like the Miz picking out all of these embarrassing moments from Dolph Ziggler's career, the sad thing is, didn't even scratch the surface.
Yeah, it really didn't, and it also kind of made me sad. I'm like, God, if Ziggler loses this, that's a really shitty note to go out on. So it's just like, here's all the stupid shit we made you do for 10 years. Ha ha, you never made it to the main event. You failed. Congratulations. It's
but
just
he
like,
did
oh,
make
God.
It to the main event, though. Like,
Did he?
He was world champion twice.
Yeah, but not when it
yeah,
came
that's
to.
Not the main event. That Sandra, you sound like all the people whenever I say there's never been a real black world champion. They always go, Mark Henry held the world title and he was doing mid-card world title matches with Big Show a few years ago. Like, come on, though. That's not WWE's main title. That's their secondary title. True. Dolph Ziggler held the secondary title and he participated in the mid-card with it. So, and not even for that long. He got hurt shortly after that. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
I think he only properly... the only time he really main evented, I guess, would have been there was a TLC where he fought Cena for the briefcase, his Money in the Bank briefcase.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been like December 2012. He properly main evented and won that when AJ sided with him, I think that was. And then he main evented the Survivor Series where he was the, you know, Sting helped him
where
win.
Sting
and
ruined everything, yeah.
Yeah, ruined the authority forever. But they were...
The thing is, though, is, like, that wasn't, like, a singles match. That was a traditional Survivor Series 4-on-4, or 5-on-5, whatever it was.
But, I mean, that just kind of says Dolph Ziggler's career. No, I mean, he never made it to be, like, a main event talent. I will agree with that. Like, and I kind of still want The Miz to win. Like, I really, really love The Miz, and I really love what he's doing, and... What a dick, right? Like, if this is the end for Dolph Ziggler, and I don't know who's going to win because they've done excellent job of there being rumors that Dolph Ziggler's contract might be up or that they might try to transition him into a backstage role or something like that. Because I've heard, you know, from various dirt sheets or whatever that, you know, it's possible maybe Dolph Ziggler does want to renegotiate, maybe they want him in more of a backstage role, maybe he's going to step away.
I
don't know what's
going
to happen.
I would love nothing more than to see him go to Japan and fight Kenny Omega in the main events over there. That's what I would love to see. That is my dream scenario for Dolph Ziggler. Lose this match, go to Japan, become a international name the way that AJ Styles did to up his ante and reclaim the big bucks that he could be making and reestablish himself as a world-class main event talent overseas. Just like AJ Styles did with TNA.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting. I don't know if he loses the match, I don't know if he would be released from WWE completely or if... You know, he'll work with them in a different capacity.
If his contract is up, though, that's different from being released.
Well, I think his contract was... I don't think it's, like, the natural expiration of his contract. Unless there was, like, an out clause or something. Because I think a year ago he signed, like, a 3-year extension.
Right.
But I don't... I gotcha. You know, I don't know the details of it. But I think the fact that there's speculation about that is good. Because it makes the match have a lot more drama, right? Because we don't know all what's going on with it. We don't know if he's, you know, leaving, transitioning to a backstage role, doing something else. And the fact that we don't know that for sure is great. Because that means that, like, I'm going to be really invested in it. And if Dolph Ziggler does lose, I will probably feel sadness about it. Even though I still really want The Miz to win because I love The Miz and I love him being Intercontinental Champion. And I, like, the payoff to Dolph Ziggler being Intercontinental Champion is not something that I look forward to as much as The Miz just continuing to lord it over everyone and being like the best character on SmackDown, right? Because The Miz is so good right now. And
I think there's more of a story in Ziggler losing here.
I think
even
there
if
is
it's
too.
Even if it's not that he's really, really leaving or really retiring, even if it's just because, you know, if Dolph Ziggler wins this and becomes the Intercontinental Champion, he's been the Intercontinental Champion multiple times before. You know, we're where we are. But if they can exploit the emotional connection to where The Miz beats him and everyone's really bad for Ziggler, and then in the style of what they did with Cody Rhodes before they ruined him as well, where he was sacked and people were like desperate for him and Goldust to come back, maybe they can bottle this affection that people have developed towards Ziggler in the last couple of weeks and turn it into a #bringbackDolph sort of thing. Maybe you'll take a month out and attack The Miz at something, or, you know, maybe there's long-term more
in it
if they
do that,
if he loses.
I think if they do bring him back, I think they need to wait a while. I don't want to see it happen soon because, I mean, The Miz said, like, very explicitly last week when Dolph Ziggler put his career on the line, he said, and this isn't going to be one of those things where you go to Raw or you go to NXT or you take a 30-day sabbatical, you're done, right? So they did call that out on TV, like, explicitly, no, this isn't going to be me just going away for a month. This isn't going to be me buying tickets to the front row of the show. This isn't going to be me doing any of those cops. Yeah, like, it's not going to be one of those cop-up
things. Maybe the start of next year or something? Maybe takes the rest of the year?
Maybe, yeah.
Because I think if they waited for a while, I think there's a lot of drama in bringing him back more than if they just do it too soon.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, we'll see what happens. And I'm trusting SmackDown that if Dolph Ziggler does win, I'm kind of trusting that they might do something with it because SmackDown's been really, really good. I mean, the main event right now, and I know I do have to get going soon, but the main event segment of the show was Dean Ambrose, John Cena, and AJ Styles facing off in kind of like a conversation, I guess. Like, it was basically just them calling each other out, and it was great. The interaction between the three
brutally,
of them.
They were brutally honest with Cena, which I liked.
Yeah.
They took it to Cena. Cena didn't speak any words for the majority of it. He just sat there and took all of their lashings, their verbal lashings, and then just ended it by saying, talk is cheap, and then jumped them and started attacking. I loved it because I didn't have to hear John Cena's stupid rah-rah promo for the 8 millionth time. So it saved me from that. That was awesome.
John Cena's been doing less rah-rah and more actual, like, no, here's the deal. I'm John Cena. I'm the best. Yes, I am on top. Yes, I am part-time. Yes, this is why. Like, if you saw his Talking Smack promo from last week, they're actually letting him be human and they're letting him be authentic for what feels like the first time since I've ever seen John Cena. And it's working for me. It's humanizing him and it's making it like, it's giving it a lot more stakes and a lot more drama. Like, I don't think Cena's going to win because he's going to be going away, right? And yes. I think the build to him becoming 16-time world champion, if they can stretch that out, I think it can be a great story. And I think they're starting that now. And I really like that all three guys seem on par with each other on the microphone, and they're all playing their characters perfectly. Even Dean Ambrose has been pretty good. Like, I'm still not a Dean Ambrose fan. He needs to stay consistent for more than a week for me to even start to get back on the Dean Ambrose train at any point. But Dean Ambrose being honest about, you know, not liking John Cena and that kind of thing, it's been compelling. And AJ Styles being the perfect smarmy asshole is really compelling, and he's really good, and I want him to stay champion for a long time because I love him so much.
Yeah, I think that John Cena is going to have this match won with a AA or something to Ambrose, and then AJ will steal the victory out from under him, and I think that that is the perfect way to play it out because AJ's amazing. I love AJ. He's phenomenal. No pun intended. He needs to remain the champion for until Cena takes it from him at Royal Rumble is what I'll say.
All right. Yeah. I mean, I think AJ absolutely retains. And, you know, unfortunately, our time's kind of running out here. I do need to go, but I do want to say I'm also really looking forward to Becky Lynch versus Alexa Bliss. There wasn't that much build to that on this show necessarily. Like, I mean,
I'm also looking forward to that match. That's going to be a great match.
I think it is going to be a great match. And I don't think
Alexa Bliss
winning.
Is underrated.
I think, she's absolutely underrated. Like, she did pin Becky Lynch on this episode of SmackDown, which is kind of annoying. It ended up being in a tag match because there were shenanigans and the ghost of Teddy Long, you know, inhabited Daniel Bryan and he made a tag team match. But I'm really looking forward to that match. And I think that story's been told really well, too. So all in all, SmackDown, good job with the storytelling. I'm really into the tag scene, too. I'm looking forward to Usos versus Beauty and the Man Beast.
Who wins that match, Sandra?
Probably the Usos.
I agree, and I think that's the right call.
Because, I mean, it looks like we're still building toward Usos versus American Alpha, right? Like,
yes.
That's happening.
Yes.
But I would not be sad if he's later made Rhino win. But yeah, no, I mean, them turning heel and completely reinventing themselves is great. I love it.
Yeah, and they're working differently, too.
They are.
That's something immediately.
They're doing
like,
submissions.
They're working heel. They're doing great. Yeah. Yeah, no, kudos to them. They deserve it if they do get it, but I still love Beauty and the Man Beast.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You have to.
Yes.
You absolutely have to.
No, you absolutely have to. And clearly Robert loves them because you love them.
Oh, yeah.
And he loves your happiness.
That is key to me. But as Sandra says, she has to go and service the patrons of Grand Rapids, Michigan. So we'll have to wrap this one up. But I do hope that everybody enjoys. No merci.
No merci.
Whatever you choose to watch it, hopefully through paying means. Don't want to anger David with any more tales of piracy.
Oh, and, no, you pirate with the WWE all you want to. download that Red Hot Chili Peppers album. You know, no, I'm joking.
Well,
piracy is terrible, you guys.
Nobody
never pirate
ever
any.
That.
Go buy our t-shirts at Squared Circle Tees.
Yeah, but don't buy anything related to the Red Hot Chili Pepper. And I speak as a lapsed.
Don't even pirate them.
No, don't even pirate them. Because now you get those reports, those things like, when oh my god, this is like the most pirated album of the year. And like they wear that like it's a badge of honor. So don't even pirate them. Don't give them anything they can use to suggest that they're any good whatsoever.
Nothing at
Just
all.
Ignore them and maybe they'll go away. Put your shirts on and go back to your children. You're 40 plus year old now. It's just getting sad. Right,
stop
okay.
Stop waving your dick in public. Please.
You're getting to the age now when it's slowly becoming acceptable again to wave your dick in public. They'll just be like, oh, those old guys.
I'm senile.
Yeah, they're just senile. But
maybe
anyway.
You got away from the retirement home, mate.
We've veered wildly off topic. But thanks to David and Sandra, and thank you for listening. I assume...
Sandra, where can they find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW.
SandraRuthRW. You can find me at Zoopsoul. That's ZOOPSOUL. Hey, Robert, ain't I great?
Ain't he great?
Robert is the road dog to my Jeff Jarrett, by the way. I love
it. I sing the songs and he takes the credit.
You guys, I'm watching that stuff on Retro Raw and it's
I know,
so good.
You actually get it.
It's so good.
I love it. It's amazing. I love it so much.
you can get me at Bertie_ITR. That ITR obviously stands for Inside the Ropes because, as I said, I've been here for 5 years.
Fucking twats.
I love how the Americans say twats. Because we're all like twats.
Twats.
But you guys, twats.
Twats.
The first time I ever heard that was Christopher Moltisanti on The Sopranos. He always had a beautiful twat, and I liked it very much.
I will say this, twat or twat, beautiful word either way.
No, it's wonderful.
You can't really pronounce it. It's fantastic either way.
And don't forget, there's nothing wrong with just going out and grabbing someone by the twat and having your way with them, because the president, potentially president-elect, says so. Oh my goodness. Rest in peace, America. Right, we'll see you all next time on Inside the Ropes.
Bye!
Bye!
I'm here to show the world! I'm here to show the world!
Come on!
I'm here to show the world. I'm here to show the world.
define the theme.